Brianna Karp was only 23 years old in February 2009 when she suddenly found herself homeless. She had worked her way into a promising career as a personal assistant, but now she was abruptly confronted with the prospect of figuring out how to live alone, jobless, with no home to speak of, and with no family to fall back on for support. When she started a blog to chronicle her experience as a homeless woman, Ms. Karp began to garner an audience and the publicity that eventually led to the publication of her first book, a memoir she has called The Girl's Guide to Homelessness. It's published by Harlequin, and I'm very pleased it has brought her to our show today. Hello.
Hello. I'm so happy to be here. Thank you.
You wrote that you never gave much thought to homelessness, but had been fed stereotypes that the homeless are lazy, dirty, and even scary. So I assume you never imagined you could end up in that situation yourself.
No, I think most people don't until, you know, it happens to them personally or somehow touches their life.
And when we see homeless people, we often think they're but for the grace of God.
Right. And so it was very scary to find myself in that situation. I think most people don't think about it, but it's becoming an increasing reality today with the recession and people losing their jobs and homes and living paycheck to paycheck.
Well, what was your life like before you lost your job and then your home? You must have had some money in the bank.
I was an executive assistant. I was making about $50,000 a year, which is pretty decent, yeah, in Southern California. It doesn't go as far as maybe other places, but it was pretty good. I loved my job, and I had a little bit of money in the bank. I was laid off in July of 2008, and I kind of managed to limp along on unemployment and the little bit that I had saved up for about 6 months before I ran out and still wasn't finding work. And that was the first time I'd never been able to find work in all my years of working. And so that was, you know, really scary for me. I was kind of in denial about how bad the recession was. And so I moved back in with my mother and stepfather for a really short, disastrous stint for about 2 months. And things kind of came to a head.
Well, the way you describe it, you probably could have predicted that it was going to be a problem.
I did. It was a last resort, definitely. But I was kind of still in that denial mode, like, oh, I'll just get a job and get back out on my feet again and everything will be fine, except for the first time nobody was hiring.
Your mother had been a problem in the past?
She had been. We have a very toxic relationship. I was sexually abused by my biological father when I was 2 years old, and then physically and emotionally abused by my mother from the time I was 9 and up. So basically that was my entire childhood was abuse.
And she never changed?
No. There was a change, obviously, when I was 9 years old. Things got bad. My mother was diagnosed with bipolar disorder, I was told by my stepfather. So, there's only so much you can do in that kind of situation. And it was definitely last resort going back there. And I kind of had hoped that because I was an adult now, that things might be different or I might be able to handle it better. And things fell very quickly back into their old toxic patterns.
And there was no one else, a friend, a sibling, a grandparent?
All of my family are Jehovah's Witnesses. And I was raised a Jehovah's Witness, and they enforce a shunning policy for any member who leaves the church. I'm no longer a Jehovah's Witness, and so none of my extended family or my parents even are allowed to speak to me. And then I do have a couple of friends, but they were all struggling themselves, you know. Some of them had been laid off themselves, had moved back in with their own parents, and most of them already had roommates. So it wasn't really something that I could burden them with. Occasionally, one would let me crash on their couch for a couple of days, but, you know, when their roommates were out of town. But there wasn't any, you know, permanent long-term solution that they could offer me.
And this was just after the economic crash. So
it was.
It was tougher than it might have been otherwise. Did you at least get some callbacks and some interviews?
I picked up temp work, but it was few and far between. I signed up with a lot of temp agencies. And most of my days were spent sitting in Starbucks with my laptop and sending out resumes for 8 to 10 hours at a time, hundreds and even thousands of resumes over the course of about 9 months. There was no one hiring. I even was willing to apply for jobs below my pay station. I was like, okay, I'll work at a gas station. I don't care. I'll just work anywhere. But you go in for jobs like that, and they look at your resume, and they say, okay, well, your job history shows that you're an executive assistant. As soon as the economy comes back, you're going to leave, so you're overqualified. And then you compete for jobs that are what you used to make, and they have an overabundance of people to hire from. They're receiving hundreds of resumes. And so the competition there is so high.
Where did you live after you left your mother?
I moved into a Walmart parking lot. And so I spent my you know, days in Starbucks, as I've said. And then I bought a $9.95, you know, gym pass at a local mom-and-pop gym, and I drove there to shower. And I would fill up jugs of water at gas stations and cook food on my car engine. And that kind of became my routine, you know. It was sustainable, if not optimal.
And then you got a trailer at some point?
I had the trailer already. Coincidentally, about a month before I became homeless, my biological father had committed suicide. And so I got a phone call saying that I was the next of kin and that he hadn't left much behind, but he had left a truck and a travel camper. And so I inherited that and I kind of set it aside and said, okay, I don't know what I'm going to do with this. So I was busy looking for work. I had a lot on my plate. So I was like, I'll just deal with it later. And then, you know, ironically, it ended up being one of the more valuable resources that I could have had because Walmart has a policy where they allow campers to stay overnight in their parking lot.
Well, you were lucking out here because one of the biggest problems for most homeless people who really want to change things is just keeping clean and keeping their clothes clean and being able to iron things, not looking like they were sleeping on the street.
Right. And I think, you know, the people that we think of as homeless are very, you know, visibly homeless often. You know, you think of the guy panhandling on the corner for change, but the very visible homeless people are really only the tip of the iceberg. There's this, you know, rapidly expanding and growing, you know, sub-movement of mobile homeless people like me who are living out of cars and campers and just trying to stay under the radar and get back on their feet and find a job. You don't want to be seen as homeless because there's such a stigma attached to it.
But you didn't have electricity or water
or
the things that we take for granted. And how do you manage without those things?
I showered at the gym. I camped out at Starbucks because they had air conditioning. I filled up jugs of water at the gas station. There was a gas station about two blocks from me that was open 24/7 if I needed to use the restroom in the middle of the night. And I just sort of made it work. You know, you find a routine and you stick to it.
And where were your friends in all of this? Did anyone offer to help you out?
I had a couple close friends, and two of them knew. They're my best friends. I've known them for 10 years and 4 years. And they had their own problems. One of them was actually in the Army, so she was off at boot camp for most of it, and she wasn't able to offer much help. But my best guy friend, Brandon, is a wonderful guy. He has a roommate, so you know, occasionally he'll let me crash on his couch when his roommate's out of town. But really, all he could offer was moral support. And, you know, he has his own problems. And I think that's the general feeling right now in the economic climate is we've all got our own problems and we've all got to deal with them.
Well, you had a cell phone. So was that where most of your money went?
Yeah, a lot of money went to paying my cell phone bill and paying for gasoline, you know, if I needed to get places. And I would pick up temp jobs where I could.
Did people suspect that you were homeless?
No, actually, because I dressed as well as I could. I live in a college town, so occasionally if I was lounging around Starbucks in pajamas, then, you know, I could pass as a college student. And if I dressed nicer, like if I had a job, I would, you know, a temp job, I would go there, and then afterwards I would go to Starbucks and keep sending out resumes. And once, actually, a Starbucks barista approached me, and he's like, you know, I see you here almost every day. And he's like, and you're dressed really nice, and you've got your laptop. He said, are you a writer or something, or do you run a business from Starbucks like a lot of people do? And I was like, oh, no, I'm homeless, because I was kind of curious how he'd react to that. And he was very taken aback and kind of stepped backwards. It was like, oh, I'm sorry, and he didn't know what to say at all. So, but I did notice that you know, after that, they started slipping me, you know, muffins and bagels at the end of the night when they were closing up instead of throwing them out. So, you know, I think there are good people out there, they just don't know how to react to a word with that kind of stigma attached to it.
My guest is Brianna Karp, her book, The Girl's Guide to Homelessness. And then you did become a writer because you started blogging
about
your experience. Did you pick up readership right away?
Not right away. And actually, the blog itself started as a joke. I didn't think that it would ever catch on. My friend Brandon had kind of joked, oh, you should blog about being homeless. You know, that's what all the kids are doing these days. And I think he, like me, thought that, you know, it wouldn't take very long for me to find a job and get back on my feet. So kind of as a joke, so I could be like, oh, see, there, I did it. I you know, made a blog post. And then it felt really cathartic. And I was like, oh, you know what, that feels good. So I kept doing it. And I didn't actually expect people to read it. But then, you know, a couple of weeks went by and I got a comment on my blog and I was like, oh, someone saw it. And then, you know, a couple more weeks and it just started snowballing and gathering this following. But I was blogging anonymously because I didn't want people to know who I was or where I was. You know, it was a safety thing. You're very vulnerable being a homeless woman.
Well, you probably felt vulnerable just being in that trailer in the Walmart parking lot.
Yeah, homelessness in of itself is vulnerable, but I think being a woman, you know, adds to it. You know, you've got that extra feeling of you know, helplessness and, you know, keeping the rapists at bay.
Well, you did establish a relationship with another homeless person from the U.K.?
Yes, I did. I met a homeless activist.
This doesn't sound like the best thing to have happened to you.
You know, it helped in a lot of ways. You know, through him, I found this entire network of homeless activists online, which is somewhere you wouldn't expect to find homeless people. I think people think homeless people with technology, but, you know, most people weren't born homeless. And, you know, some of them hold on to cell phones and laptops after they become homeless because they're your best resources for finding a job, or they access computers through public libraries. And so, you know, we have a luxury now that we didn't have maybe 10 years ago, which is with a couple clicks of a mouse, you can access this support network. So that was actually a great thing to happen to me. And I think that's a lot of that is the lighter, more charming side of the book is, you know, the romance aspect that, you know, I don't want to give away the ending or anything, but, you know.
Well, there were complications.
There were complications. But while it happened, you know, I think there was a lot of, like, hope and joy and love to be found in a dark place.
Well, it was Southern California. Arnold Schwarzenegger is now in the news, so.
I've heard.
At one point, you were offered an internship with a columnist for Elle magazine. How did you land that job?
Again, it was almost by accident. I had been reading E. Jean Carroll's advice column in Elle magazine for about 9 years, and I really liked her. She had this, you know, very blunt but funny way of putting things. And so, you know, I was having a hard time, you know, adjusting to homelessness. And so I just wrote her a letter saying, you know, this is who I am. This is my story. And can you give me any advice? And then several months went by. I completely forgot about it. I had just done it on a whim anyway. And I never expected to hear back from her. And then maybe 5 or 6 months later, she published my letter in an Elle advice column. And actually offered me a 3-month telecommuting internship.
Hmm. And so did that help you?
It opened a lot of doors. I mean, obviously, I was thrilled, and it was very surreal. And the media, you know, took it and kind of ran with it, which definitely opened up a lot of doors and kind of led indirectly to the book deal.
Well, you became a voice for the homeless to some degree.
Yeah, that definitely happened, too.
And were people surprised?
I think so. And, I think people, you know, and occasionally there's a backlash or people want to say, oh, she's not really homeless, or she doesn't really, you know, she doesn't count. She had a trailer. And I've noticed that those people are people who, you know, aren't homeless or haven't thought about homelessness much. The actual homeless people that I encounter are like, awesome, great, get the word out there. So I think people like to keep the word homelessness at arm's length. They don't want to think that, you know, it could happen to someone like them. They don't want to think I could be their daughter or their sister or their friend.
Even if you have a job, many years ago, I was burned out of my apartment. And I was homeless, in effect, for some months. People helped me out. Mm-hmm. But it's just not the same as being able to go to your own place and to your own stuff.
Right. You lose all autonomy.
It's very stressful.
You feel like you've lost all element of choice.
So we're not going to go through your travels and all that, but because this is a complicated story. Mm-hmm. But you wound up getting a book deal?
I did. And there's, you know, the book right in front of you. So that's, you know, it's exciting. It's kind of surreal. I was nervous about writing a book. I was like, oh, gosh, no, I can't write a book. I don't think I'm talented enough to write a book. But, you know, I had a lot of agents and publishers approaching me going, you know, you can really help people with this. And so it took a lot of coaxing, and especially to say, okay, I'm going to put my name and my face out there and my story, you know, so that people can read it and do what they like with it. And occasionally that means judge it, you know, because that's the risk inherent in writing a memoir. But, you know, like 99% of the feedback that I've gotten has been positive, and that's amazing to me because I would never have expected something like that.
So the book is published, but this is not going to pay the rent right now. What are you doing?
I just got a job about 5 months ago at a local nonprofit theater in Orange County. I'm the new marketing assistant there, and I really love my job. So I'm learning a lot there. I've never been in marketing before. And then I'm also continuing to blog and advocate for the homeless.
Do you find that most homeless people feel kind of guilty, like it's their own fault that they became homeless?
I think, you know, there's a stigma to it. I think the people more likely to feel that it's the homeless people's fault are people who've never been homeless themselves, because they they think, you know, oh, well, this could never happen to me. I have a safety net, and, you know, this would never have happened to someone who had a built-in safety net. And I think they don't realize, you know, living paycheck to paycheck, especially the way everyone is now, you take away one or two fallback cushions that you think you have, maybe job or, you know, in my case, family, and all of a sudden you don't really have anything to fall back on anymore.
You've revealed an awful lot of intimate details about your life in print. You worried at all about how this information will affect the rest of your life and your career?
Yeah, I mean, that was something I definitely had to think about before I did it, and it was scary. There's always a temptation to kind of gloss things over, sanitize yourself, or make yourself sound better than you are, but I didn't want to do that, and I thought it would almost be better to, you know, be brutal about the less salient points of my life and the mistakes that I've made than to, you know, make myself sound better than I am and then have that come back and bite me in the behind later when people find out that that's not the way it went. So it was better just to be straight about it and say, you know, this is what happened and this is what I've learned and taken from it.
What advice would you give to somebody who suddenly finds him or herself homeless? Because the problems continue today. Unemployment rates are still pretty high.
The most important thing I've found is to, you know, kind of take stock of your resources and take inventory and say, okay, what can I use? What is the most important thing to hold on to? Obviously, something like a laptop, you know, you could sell it for the price of a meal or two, but then, you know, the meal's gone and you've lost one of the most important resources that you could have for, you know, getting a job or for potential employers reaching you.
So you say hold on to your cell phone and your laptop.
Right. Hold on to your resources, and also social media and technology are your friend. I mean, through that you can, you know, connect with people all over the world that can help you and point you in the right direction. And that's, again, a luxury we didn't have a decade ago, and make as much use of it as you possibly can.
And meanwhile, we hope that you make a lot of money from the sale of this book.
I don't know if that'll happen, but in any case, if it, you know, gives someone something to connect to or helps even a handful of people, then I'll feel like it's done its job.
And you're back to Southern California?
I am.
Brianna Karp, her book, The Girl's Guide to Homelessness, is published by Harlequin Books. And I want to thank you for being on our show today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.